You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, do you ever wonder how drug companies come up with names like Zocor or Cymbalta? We'll talk to an expert who will let us in on the complicated and mysterious process of naming new prescription drugs.
First, what's shared with your doctor stays with your doctor, right? Most people assume that what they tell their doctor is private, but that's not always true.
What a lot of people don't know is that every time they get a blood test or pick up a drug prescription, that information with their names removed may be collected and then sold by commercial companies who make billions in the process.
Patients may have very little say in this and find it difficult, if not impossible, to opt out of having their data collected.
Adam Tanner joins us now. He's writer in residence at Harvard University's Institute for Quantitative Social Science. He's the author of the new book, Our Bodies, Our Data, How Companies Make Billions Selling Our Medical Records. Adam, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
Well, what first clued you into this wholesale marketing of people's medical data?
I researched a book several years ago called What Stays in Vegas, and that's about the business of customer information that businesses gather about us to improve their sales and marketing. And a lot of that looked at what's going on in Las Vegas as well as elsewhere. I thought I would do a chapter in that book about medical data. I thought it would be relatively easy to tackle that subject. But it turned out to be so vast a trade, so many billions of dollars at stake, and so complicated that I set that project aside and then spent the last 2 years researching this basically hidden trade of all of our medical information.
There's a lot of medical information out there about us. Let's start with, you know, that trip to the doctor's office, maybe a little lab work or something like that. When I'm in there, I'm assuming it's between me and the doctor in the lab. What kind of information could actually go out and be sold?
Of course, you're right to assume that that's something that's been part of medicine since ancient Greek times, that you would be in complete confidence speaking with your doctor. But with the digitization of medical records has come the ability to spread this information elsewhere. Now, often that helps us. The doctor can easily send the prescription to the pharmacy or send the blood test results to and from other specialists. But at the same time, what is happening now is that many of these entities are selling this information about us to commercial data miners for use that's not related to your medical care. That information doesn't have your name on it. It has the name of your doctor. It has your birth date. It has your gender, what part of town you live in. But that information about you is gathered together over time to create a medical dossier about you largely for commercial purposes.
Right. It's anonymized, I think, is the word that you use in the book. It's anonymous data, at least in theory. How confident can we be that once our data goes out there to be mined, that it won't be re-identified with us?
The problem with anonymized data is that a single piece of data may be safe, but if you add many pieces of information about you over time, it's increasingly at risk to be re-identified. So it may be your doctor's office visit 3 years ago, and then a blood test you had a year ago, and then some prescriptions you had this year, and other information. If you add different pieces of information, such as different cities where you may have had medical care, then it becomes ever easier. So you take me, for example, I'm teaching for a year in Alaska in Fairbanks. So if you have medical records from me in Fairbanks, man, my age, my gender, and my part of town, added to where I lived before, which was Cambridge, Massachusetts, and before that, Belgrade, Serbia, where I was working for a few years, all of a sudden I'm likely the only person that could meet that profile, and thus you could re-identify me.
What's the damage to us as individuals if this data is out there, especially if our names get attached back to it?
So the damage could be several-fold. Firstly, most significantly, I think our confidence in the medical system might be undermined if we don't feel that we can fully disclose everything that's bothering us to our medical professionals. If you're worried that this information is in circulation, you might be a little less forthright. The other possible issues are some kind of discrimination or embarrassment. So, for example, employers might be interested in this information. Very expensive employees who cost them a lot through health insurance costs might be worth getting rid of, even though that's not allowed. Life insurance companies legally can deny you life insurance if they worry that you're going to be a very costly investment. You could have other kinds of people using it against you, such as in the political arena or in foreign affairs, or a jealous former lover or a jealous workplace colleague. all sorts of people could use this information for bad, and that's something that we should be concerned about, especially into the future as such re-identifications and use of this data becomes more possible.
You also write about how this can be used to market medications very directly to doctors, and you write about doctors being surprised to know how much drug company salespeople know about what they prescribe, how often they prescribe it. Can you talk about that?
So there is these dossiers that I first mentioned that are anonymized about us, the patients, but there are named dossiers about individual doctors by the hundreds of thousands across the United States. Drug companies use this to target their sales to doctors. So they may know that your doctor typically prescribes a certain brand medication, drug A, but drug company B may want to send their salesman and say, hey, doctor, we've got a great drug. Here's drug B. Let me give you some free samples. Let me take you out to lunch. So they could use that information in a sophisticated way to figure out what kind of patients the doctor has, what kind of drugs they typically prescribe, what kind of needs they have, and then target their sales pitch accordingly.
And here's a weird thing. You write, they may buy snacks, bagels and lox for the staff or something, and if the doctor doesn't prescribe enough of the drugs, they'll say, oh, sorry, staff, bagels are out. Your doctor's not prescribing enough of our drug. This actually happens?
Well, so some of the excesses of the past have been cut back somewhat, especially in the 1990s. There was a wild amount of incredible meals offered for doctors and food brought to the staff, to their staff and so on. But interestingly, the drug companies understood that if they would bring every week a big spread of luscious breakfasts and bagels and lox and all sorts of things to the staff, that if the doctor didn't prescribe enough of the certain medication, the staff would be discontent, and then the doctor would have to hear from the staff. So, of course, that's not necessarily in the interest of the patient. You, as the patient, want the doctor to prescribe the best treatment and, if possible, the cheapest treatment. Perhaps there's a generic that does the job just as well as the expensive name brand. So those are some of the tricks that have been used in the past by these big drug companies.
Talking to Adam Tanner, his new book is called Our Bodies, Our Data, How Companies Make Billions Selling Our Medical Records. An argument, a big data type argument in favor of this kind of thing, Adam, you address this in the book, is the idea that, hey, taking my anonymous data and yours and everybody else's, we can start to really use research, big data research, to find correlations between one disease condition and another, find out what treatments work, that sort of thing. Do we actually see that kind of benefit?
So the data miners, the companies that do this kind of business, and they include companies you've never heard of, such as Quintiles IMS, but also companies such as IBM Watson, LexisNexis, and some of the health insurance companies, they say that all of this big data will help advance science and medicine. So far, the insights that have come from it have been interesting, and an interesting cost analysis and things of that nature, but there haven't been major solving of diseases or major new drugs developed. What I would prefer to see, and I think it's worth talking about, is giving patients a choice as to what happens with the data. Right now, if it's anonymized data about us, if our name is removed, we have no say. In fact, we're not even informed when that data is traded and sold about us. I think we as patients should have the say of what happens, and I think many people would gladly give it to science, to respected researchers and institutions, in the hopes that they can make use of it to help solve diseases.
What can a patient do, a healthcare consumer do, to try to protect information, to try to take control, or do we even have options at this point?
So this is where it becomes tricky. So if it involves non-medical data, how you use the internet, what information you share with retailers, and so forth, you do have some control. You can take more measures to protect your privacy. The problem is the kind of medical data that we're talking about here is sold without you even knowing about it within the system that we're talking about it. So the best way would be to change the rules on a national level to say that medical data is any information about a patient, whether or not it's anonymized. There is a second category of information that is named data about you that comes from outside of the doctor's office, named medical data. So if you subscribe to a medical magazine or some kind of ailment-related magazine, what you search for on the internet, what you say on Twitter, whether you wear fitness devices, some of that information can be sold. And so you should be sensitive, I guess, if you're concerned, as to outside of the doctor's office, what kind of medical information that you're sharing that could be used by others.
Can you talk about the scope of this data mining in health information? What kind of money are we talking about here?
So it's billions of dollars. The biggest data mining company is called Quintiles IMS. It's a company that's been around more than 60 years. It's worth more than $20 billion. It's a worldwide trade, and in many of the big developing countries, it's a very large major business. So in Europe and Japan, but even in developing countries, increasingly this has become a major business. And the reason's pretty straightforward. We spend hundreds of billions of dollars on drugs, and if companies can get more insights and help boost their sales, it's worth paying for this kind of information. So it's been around for quite a number of years, but it's becoming ever more sophisticated with these individual patient dossiers having been developed in the last 10, 15 years in a very sophisticated way.
Are there policy changes you'd like to see to clamp down on this a little bit?
So right now, the data that belongs to us or should belong to us is only that data which names us. So the HIPAA rules, which define how medical information about us can be traded and transferred, HIPAA rules say that your name's not on it, certain pieces of detail, such as your address or Social Security's not on it, it's not your data. I think we should update those rules to give you more say. I think there should be more transparency from the companies that trade our data to give us a say in what happens to it. I think we should also be encouraged to donate our data to science to help research for medicine and diseases, but I think we should have the say in that. So I think we really should empower people to have the choice whether or not they want to be sharing this information.
I want to wrap up on that point of transparency. Even for you going out and looking for this information, it sounds like in many cases, people didn't really want to talk about this.
I should mention a bit of my background. I spent 5 years covering the Kremlin as a foreign correspondent. I researched the 9/11 hijackers in Germany. I've done many investigative projects as a writer over my career. I've had to use those same investigative techniques to try to find out what happens with our medical data. It's a very lucrative business for these data mining companies, for the drug pharmacy companies that sell it, for many of the middlemen, and they would prefer not to reveal too much about it. I think they can still do a prosperous business and be far more open, and that's what I'm trying to do in this new book, Our Bodies, Our Data.
Adam, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
That was Adam Tanner, writer-in-residence at Harvard University's Institute for Quantitative Social Science. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Our Bodies, Our Data, How Companies Make Billions Selling Our Medical Records.
Coming up, we'll learn about the complicated process of naming new prescription drugs. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.